Hello, everyone.
What's up?
Welcome back to the Secret Syllabus podcast.
The Secret Syllabus is a production of the Female Quotient and iHeartRadio and co-produced by the Female Quotient and Wonder Media Network. I'm Katie Tracy.
And I'm Hannah Ashton. This episode is all about sexism, how it affects us in college, and how it may affect us in the workplace.
First, let's start with the word sexism. What is it? Sexism is discrimination based on a person's sex or gender. Sexism can affect anyone, but it has primarily affected women and girls. It's been linked to stereotypes and gender roles, the belief that one sex or gender may be superior to another, and the subsequent unequal treatment one faces because of it. Hannah, have you had any conversations about this at home?
I wouldn't say very many conversations. I learned more about it when I was growing up, and I can talk about that in a second. But going back to at home, I mean, I think that there wasn't maybe as progression as you see like in the world today, but I was very happy with what I was presented with when I was growing up. I remember my grandma and my mom, they advocated that when my brother received a baseball glove as a gift, that I also received a baseball glove, and like they put me in t-ball with him, and I ended up loving that, and so went on to play softball throughout middle school. And then, but also, like, I was also taught a lot about femininity, and my mom, she was a career woman and she was a dancer, and so I was also put in ballet and more like feminine sports, you could say. So I feel like I really got the best of both worlds, where I got to witness both my parents be entrepreneurs at some point, be very career focused. And I was never really told like, oh, you can't do this because you're a woman, or you're going to even face challenges because of you're a woman. I never really received that growing up. And maybe in some ways, I think it's really good because it gave me the confidence to do what I'm doing today, you know, to start YouTube so young, to start a business in high school. I was like, well, why not? But also maybe it didn't prepare me as much for a world that we live in where there are challenges that women face just being in a business industry. So I did not have the conversations at home, and I'm interested to see how that will kind of affect me, but I'm also really happy with how I was raised. But I'd love to know about what your story is, Katie.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's amazing that you've never felt like your gender was something that limited you, because honestly, for me, yes, I think I've experienced sexism. Growing up in a conservative family in a conservative country, I've faced a lot of sexism before I even knew what the word meant. It started in how I looked, you know, being told not to wear shorts, low-cut tops, anything too revealing. I couldn't even wear nail polish. I was strongly discouraged to go out late at night because that's, quote, when men took advantage of women. And when it came to my education, I actually faced a lot of resistance in studying university abroad in a foreign country, which is now the USA for me, but because I'd be alone and no one would look after me as a woman. And that was a narrative I knew, that women needed to be taken care of. I do want to say, though, that I 100% understand these concerns from my family. I know they mean everything out of love, and a lot of their advice is based on real experiences, and it sucks to say it, but it's true.
No, I love that you shared that because I just love hearing other people's perspectives, and especially from a different country. But I'd love to know that how has your perspective changed, or what conversations are you having now since you've come to the States and started going to Cornell?
So many. I've had so many great conversations in college. And when I first got to Cornell, actually, I immediately joined two women's empowerment organizations. One for women in computing and another for women in business and leadership. And it's because I was so excited to be surrounded by ambitious women who were so passionate and unashamed in what they did. And this confidence, I felt, is something I didn't have when I was in high school. So in college, I'm now an information science major. I've always been interested in STEM. But when I was in high school and I took my first computer science class, I was actually only one of three girls in that class. And I remember being really intimidated. I felt out of place. I was actually embarrassed to admit that I liked STEM and computing fields because I didn't see other people like it. I felt like girls couldn't like these kinds of things. And so there was a time when I really almost did not pursue this because I felt that way. But, you know, thankfully my teacher encouraged me. I like I clung on to those two other girls in that class, and I'm really glad to make it to the other side now in college, because at Cornell specifically, our engineering college has a 50-50 gender ratio split. And I think that's huge, you know, going from being like less than a third, or going from a third to now a half, is such a big improvement. And now in college, I'm having so many conversations about being a woman, not only in underrepresented fields.
I love that. And I'm jealous of your classes, the Women in Business and Leadership. I would love to take that. I'm thinking about classes at Belmont, and I'm not sure if we have one like business classes specific for women, but I love your points. And so with my experience in college, I've taken a few like liberal arts classes, English classes that have just talked about, you know, discrimination, inequality in minorities as well as with women. But I find that I've learned the most and learned about gender roles and, you know, how it affects society through social media. And just growing up on YouTube and Instagram, I was introduced to this when I was in middle school. And since I didn't have those conversations at home, it was all brand new to me. I was, just figuring out like, oh, maybe this has affected me in some way, or, you know, this is what other people face. And it was all really, really interesting. But I'd love to know about you, Katie. Is sexism something you worry about now or in the future?
Very hopeful for the future, especially as an international student. I found America to be very empowering. I see groups of people who have been traditionally silenced, stripped of opportunities, band together to uproot these systems. It's a really refreshing reminder of how much power individuals have and how much more we can have if we achieve it together. And I really hope to take that with me in whatever community I'm in. What about you?
That's so inspiring. Honestly, I'm going to say yes, just because I've been hearing so much about it. And we're going to talk about the male-dominated business industry with Cindy today, which I'm going into. And, you know, as I learn more about it, it does worry me a bit. Like, oh, I haven't faced sexism yet that I know of. Like, how will I react when I do, or if I do? And, you know, how can I start building skills and traits now to build up my confidence as a 21-year-old, so that when I do hopefully get in these big boardrooms later in life, that I can feel confident in myself and my ideas then. So, you know, it can be kind of nerve-wracking when there's so much about it going on in the media and just in conversations. But like you, I'm also hopeful that because we're having these conversations now, we will feel equipped later.
Yeah, girl, I think your attitude is amazing. And you've got all of us supporting you, and definitely me. Yeah, but do tell us about our guest today.
Yes, so we had the honor to talk to Cindy Eckert, a self-made serial entrepreneur and vocal advocate for women. Cindy is known for building and selling two pharmaceutical companies, notably Sprout Pharmaceuticals, creator of female Viagra. She talks to us about wearing pink to make a statement in board meetings, creating her own space in a male-dominated industry, and how mentorship is so important.
Honestly, guys, grab a pen and paper because so much wisdom is coming your way. Let's go.
Hi, Cindy. We are thrilled to have you on the show. We know you are a champion for uplifting women through entrepreneurship and making sure they get a seat at the table. So to start, we would love to ask how you got started with Sprout Pharmaceuticals and why you decided to create a drug that centers around women's and not men's pleasure.
Thank you for having me, Hannah and Katie. So I'll tell you why, because I built a company with one of the male sexual health drugs. And guess how many there were? 26. We had 26 FDA-approved drugs for some form of male sexual dysfunction and not a single one for women. And I was standing there in 2010 going, what the hell is wrong with this equation? Because you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out something doesn't match there. Because just as many women obviously have issues in the bedroom as men do. And yet, because of a societal narrative in sex particularly, but my gosh, in healthcare period, when things go wrong for men, we go, oh, biology. And we go to work on fixing it, as witnessed by 26 options, right? When things go wrong for women, we say, oh, psychology. And we pat them on the shoulder and we tell them to take a bubble bath. And that is so dismissive at its core. Biology walks into the bedroom with us and is omnipresent in our healthcare, and we need to take it equally seriously.
You're known for wearing pink and embracing it. And so Katie and I actually put on our pink clothes today for you.
What does the color pink mean to you?
You know, I say I'm unapologetically pink. And here's what I mean by that. You know, there are gender stereotypes. And we associate femininity and pink often with weakness. I reject that. I actually see it as a strength. And for me, when I started on this mission with, you know, Addie, the quote, female Viagra, it's the little pink pill. And people would say, oh, the little pink pill. Like, it was so cute. They would pat me on the shoulder or pat me on the head. And I thought, I'm going to flip that script. Because for me, you have two choices. When people are making assumptions like that, and maybe not even from a bad place, right? But from what we as society have told about gender, I think you have two choices. You're either going to lean back in frustration or self-doubt, or you go right for it. Because that's the conversation you need to have, which is why I show up in pink every day, because that's what I believe in and that's what we're going to talk about.
That's wonderful how you just reclaimed that. And it made me think that, you know, even when guys wear pink, we think it's progress, but there's always that little side comment that's like, oh, you're in pink.
It's so true. It's so true. I will tell a story. You can imagine, like, when I was going out and trying to get investors for this, most of it is a sea of like blue and gray suits. Right? They're older guys. They were laughing at me when I showed up to raise money. And one of them, who's like, you know, the elder statesman, like the total blue suit, came into my office last year. He sat down at my like board table that has all pink chairs. And he said, "Hey, Cindy." And he lifted up his pant leg and he was wearing pink socks. And it was a little bit of like a tip of the hat. Like, I get it now. There's power in this. And he now doesn't want to be left out from the kind of opportunities I'm looking at. That's progress.
I love that so much. Can you tell us more about what it was like, you know, you being there in your pink blazer? I know you talked in another interview about how you like walking in underestimated.
I do. Listen, you know, here's why I say that. I'm sorry to tell all of the ladies listening, you are going to be underestimated. By all of the numbers, you get less funding, less promotions. You guys know this, less in you know, the pay gap, period. So there is an inherent underestimation. And I think that, you know, when I first started showing up in the rooms, it was hard to not go back out of that room and be pissed, for lack of a better word. Like, and anger isn't going to propel me forward, right? It's going to have me sit and stew. So I flipped it in my mind and I decided I'm going to gamify this. This is going to be fun. They're going to underestimate me. I'm going to just go ahead and know that. And that it lost all of its power as soon as I knew it was going to happen. And for me, it became an invitation to surprise people.
What are some other challenges you faced as a woman in a male-dominated industry, and how have you navigated and adapted?
Oh, where do I begin? So, you know, my challenges are, I think, always that, you know, underestimated in the room, a little bit of like looking like, why is this woman in pink in here? You know, getting actual capital to start my businesses. You know, those were all real challenges and real roadblocks to my ultimate success. But, and it's a little bit blanket, Hannah, but I think what happened for me is I got a really good sense of humor. And here's what I'll say to everybody. Humor has an ability to allow people to change their mind and still save face. I don't imagine that, you know, when I showed up in rooms, I knew by the numbers I wasn't the likely winner of the cash, of the job, of the whatever it may be. But when I could have fun with it, when ridiculous comments were made, if I could say, oh my gosh, what is this, the 1950s? It gave them a beat to realize how much they had overstepped and recover. And I wasn't thinking they're a bad person. I was thinking that they have a script in their mind that has embedded there by our societal narratives. And so I would just say to everybody listening, you know, does this sound like we want to say like, don't accept it, you know, fight back. It's true, but fighting back with room for people to change, that's really the best tact. And it makes the space for all of us ultimately. It's the same story as the guy coming in my room with his pink socks, right? He totally, totally laughed at me at the beginning. But imagine if I had been stuck with that frustration and never, ever taken his call again. Now he invests in other women. I've changed something really important there.
That's powerful. And later we'll go into empathy, which I'm really excited to talk to you about. But for now, you mentioned the numbers. In 2019, only 2% of total venture capital funding went to female founders. I remember when I first heard this, my friend told me that if I ever wanted to start a company, I should find a male co-founder. At first, I thought though that she was giving me practical advice, you know, this is how the world works. But the more I thought about it, the more unsettled I became, because why does it take having a male counterpart to prove your legitimacy? So if you were there, like, what would you have told me?
Oh my gosh. So first of all, I have to say, how do we think that half of the population has 2% of the good ideas? Ridiculous, right? So very smart business move to bet on the underdog, by the way, because no one else is watching. And actually, by all the data, women outperform men. We have better outcomes ultimately in our companies. And that is like data source after data source after data source. What I would say to you is that's BS advice. Absolutely not. But you are going to be hunting a different investor. That's what I would tell you. So, you know, what feels like the curse is often the blessing. And for me, it's true. Traditional venture capital money, you know, the traditional Silicon Valley kind of money that we all talk about is less likely to come to women. So find angel investors. Because you know what? They're in every single city. I raised $100 million from high net worth individuals. I never got a dime from a venture capitalist. So I'm included in that stat. But you know what? When that path wasn't available to me, I found a different path. And it was lucky, because actually, angel investors are often, you know, investing in things they have a real personal passion for. If I'm in a VC firm, they're going to play the odds. They know how many startups fail. I'm not saying they're not exceptionally smart, but like the deep personal investment is different with an angel investor. And it is as easy as literally Googling it in your city, because there's an angel investor group basically in every major metro in the country, in the US. And so you can find those angels and get in the room with them almost easier than the VCs.
Wow, that's amazing. And I'm thankful I was able to bootstrap my planner business. For women maybe starting a company that's a smaller scale where they don't need, you know, $30 to $100 million in financing, do you recommend them pitching themselves for grants, or are there other opportunities they can find? I know crowdsourcing is big as well.
Yeah, I love it. So I actually think that, you know, crowdsourcing is sort of the great equalizer for that same reason as angels. You're really finding people that connect with what you're doing. And I think you get a different level of commitment and investment from them. That passion pays off, especially because they're often strategically helpful in connecting you to other people if they've been in that space or anything else. But no, I love that I call it stiletto strapping it. So I stiletto strapped it at the beginning too. I used to cry in the corner when the credit card companies were calling because I had maxed out my credit cards. I don't recommend. But I do think there's something about that, right? You've got to demonstrate that you're willing to take a risk too. Before people open up their checkbooks to you, you got to show that you've sacrificed, or you're willing to work for free for a period of time. All of those things matter. But I love the idea of, you know, grants, even loans, despite the fact that the data is also not so great on women getting loans versus men. I think that's changing. And if you go to like SBA.gov, the Small Business Administration, you know, they do pitch competitions around the country for women. Those are great sources for early capital. Enter the contest. Go to these like angel group pitch nights and win the prizes and use that to fund your business at the outset.
So I'm really grateful that we're on this call right now, because it feels like you're mentoring us. And I know that you said you didn't have any female mentors. Why is that so important?
Oh, you know what? There's just a different conversation we can have with each other, isn't there? There really is. And when I looked, you know, up as I was growing my career, and there was nobody who looked like me. Above me, to sponsor me, to mentor me. Now, what it did, the gift of that, is it forced me to look to my left and my right. And I will say to everybody, your mentors are all around you. Everyone can teach you something if you're open-minded about it. And you're really constantly asking for help. Sometimes we forget. You just need to ask. You'd be surprised how willing people will be to help. But I really, at least in terms of my work today in the Pinkubator, you know, I want to have really frank conversations with, you know, incredible rising stars like you two, where I can help you scale your business. And sometimes, listen, the ideas aren't great. Like, all of our conversations aren't rainbows and unicorns. Some of them are really very blunt, that somebody comes in, they're great, their idea isn't great, but that kind of candor is equally important. And I think it's better delivered woman to woman. Guys right now, I will tell you, a little bit are scared of being direct. Like, they want it, the good guys like want to be helpful, right? They actually want to help you succeed. So they may cheer you on longer than they should because they're not shooting it straight. And so it's why I think it's so important for female to female mentorship.
This is interesting though, because just like you, I have two older brothers and I learn a lot from them because they're both very business and entrepreneurial minded. But can you talk about your experience growing up with two male mentors? So, like, one thing I'm curious about is, were there any times you perhaps disagreed with their male influence views and challenged them?
Oh, I think I've changed their mind on a lot of things. But I will say, first and foremost, here's what I love about my big brothers. So everybody says, like, oh, you have two big brothers. They must have been so protective. I'm like, hey, they missed that memo because they basically thought that their job was to toughen me up for the world. And I'm so grateful they did, because they really did never allow like any sort of sweet save me, help me kind of mentality from me. Look, I think sometimes their views, like all guys in the locker room, like they can say the most ridiculous thing. And I just always went after them for that. Like, are you joking? Like, what if that was me? And I, you know, they're wonderful. They've been such huge influences in my life. And I think I could quickly kind of change their mind on that. But yeah, I think they, and now one of them has two girls. So I have two nieces, and it's been fun to watch, you know, how he sees the world that he wants for them too.
So for the men listening, how can men on an individual level work to uplift women, whether in the workplace or outside of it?
Yeah, it's not, listen, it, at our core, I would like to think that all of us believe, may the best effort win, whoever is making that best effort. And I think that right now, you know, in all of the headlines and press, like, we feel like there's really sort of a war, you know, who gets the job, who doesn't. And we can't see it that way. Like, if you, the only people threatened by equality are people who don't believe they could win without advantage. And so what I would say to you is, what does it say about you if you're threatened by that? And I think there's great guys listening. I have two nephews who I'm so proud of and are so, like, they can't even believe some of my stories from like the early days of when I was in career. They couldn't believe that anybody was such a caveman then. So I think the way is, be vocal in support of the best effort, and ask yourself, if you ever feel threatened by it, what does that say about you that you wouldn't want an even playing field?
That's great. And I think it goes, you know, into race as well, not just with gender. So you've met with a lot of women in business, and Katie and I have been running our YouTube channels for years with business collaborations. And I also run an e-commerce store. But I know a lot of women are afraid to start a business because they don't believe they are qualified. What advice do you have for those women?
Okay. I say it all the time, but I'm going to say it here. Success does not come from having all the answers. Success comes from having the courage. I didn't know what I was doing when I started my first business. Are you kidding? I mean, I knew what I wanted to do. I had looked at it in a very big way. Like, what could I possibly accomplish? And then I built a roadmap. Did I know how to do every piece of that? Did I know the legal documents? Did I know how to get a manufacturer. No, but here's what I knew. I was capable. I was capable and unabashedly bold in asking for help. And if you really have that, if you have no worry about asking other people to help you, you can figure it out.
What I'm so thankful for right now, growing up and being in college, is that I have so many people to look up to, like yourself and all the women that are now being featured on Forbes and, you know, that are billionaires in business. And I always say, you know, we have so many resources available to us now. Like, I Google everything that I have a question about. And it's amazing to have that inspiration.
And it's so great. I will say, even now, if, you know, there's a silver lining, it's a pink lining in my world. If there's a pink lining of COVID, it's that we are all so connected. So, you know, online as well. And you would be surprised, for everybody listening, DM somebody who you look up to. Ask them some, do not ask them, I want to, I just posted something about this. Do not say like, hey, I want to pick your brain. That will not get a response. If you say, you know, Hannah, I am starting a business. I would like to know how to incorporate it. Can you tell me, are there any resources online or how you did it? People will answer you. You can get to, that's the beautiful thing, right? Is how connected we are now. You can get to people who you never would have been able to get to before.
I loved that post. That was great advice.
And for all our listeners, you mentioned that your DMs were open.
I am. I mean, listen, I've hired people out of my DM. I give advice, you know, all the time. I'm reading all of those. So I just would ask, like, if you're coming, you got to come with a specific ask, or I can't quickly help you because it's, you know, there's not enough time in the day to just sit down as much as I'd love to with every single person, but like a really specific ask, I'll help.
Amazing. So there's a double standard placed upon women in different workplace settings. For example, you shouldn't wear too much makeup, or you should wear makeup, or too high of heels or too flashy, but you shouldn't be dressed too casual either. What is your advice for women like you who want to embrace the pink but are afraid to?
Never be anybody but yourself, or you will be unhappy. And what I would tell you is, if you are in an environment that doesn't allow you to show up as you, leave. And I know that feels hard to do at times when you're in there, but the beauty is, you guys have, you know, an extraordinary opportunity and future ahead. Find the place where you are celebrated for you. It was one of my early lessons. You know, my first job out of college, I worked for big corporate, and it's exactly as you describe. Like, there were, you know, this idea of a uniform in terms of how you showed up, and there was their way of doing things. And what struck me is, the most successful businesses actually do not try to homogenize. They do not try to make it a sea of sameness. They allow everyone's individuality to help them rise. And so that is part of what you're looking for. When you guys are looking for your path and your job, look for places where whatever the hell is you and you like, no makeup, lots of makeup, lashes, no, whatever it is, find that place.
And lastly, do you have any last advice for college students on how we can contribute to working towards equality, even if we aren't in the workplace yet?
I think never underestimate the power of your own voice. Really, actually, there's such a good quote, and I'm going to get it wrong. It is sort of the riskiest thing of all is to stand up for something against the grain and do it out loud. I mean, it's one thing to believe it and to sit there and feel that, but actually to really be true leaders and stand on those things with conviction that you believe in, that's all we can ask for anybody. But don't underestimate the contribution that that really makes, and the others who are watching your example who also will do the same. There's an extraordinary ripple effect in showing true conviction and leadership.
Cindy, thank you so much for joining us on The Secret Syllabus. It has been an honor to interview you and learn more about your mission to put women on top. To all our listeners, you can follow Cindy at Cindy Pink CEO. And if you are a female entrepreneur, you have to check out The Pink Ceiling after this. We'll have it in the show notes as well. Thank you, Cindy.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Hannah, I am speechless right now. What did you take away?
Can I just say the whole episode? I seriously love Cindy so much, and it spoke to me so much that I've actually been writing a semester-long essay about the lack of female funding in America, how it affects minorities especially, and then what steps we could do to change this for the future. And needless to say, this episode really spoke to me as I am an entrepreneur now and aspiring to grow as an entrepreneur, and the fact that female-founded businesses get 2% of venture capital is scary. And like I said, it ignited me to write a whole essay about this. And I loved using this interview as a source for it.
Mm-hmm. And I love how she said too, that your destination can take many different ways, you know? So even if you can't get that funding, you can try angel investors, you can try many different ways to get to where you want to. But my favorite part was when Cindy talked about humor and its twofold power in, number one, being able to diffuse any insult with grace, and number two, challenging the person who just made the insult and giving them pause to reflect on the implications of what they just said. Not gonna lie though, this does presuppose that you have humor, and being funny definitely comes more naturally to some people than others. That said, I've always believed that being able to laugh at yourself and bounce off hate is such a great life skill, and I had to learn it early by being on YouTube since I was 13, and I'm sure you can relate too, Hannah.
No, I totally agree. I think that was great advice, but like you, I'd be kind of nervous delivering a joke that was also so savage, but I really, like I said, took so much away, and Cindy was so nice to both of us throughout the episode, before and after.
Yes, Cindy is such an older sister. And I think that was a great way to end this week's episode. We are your hosts, Katie. You can find me at AlohaKatieX on Instagram.
And I'm Hannah. You can find me at Miss Hannah Ashton on Instagram. The Secret Syllabus is a production of The Female Quotient and iHeartRadio and co-produced by The Female Quotient and Wonder Media Network.
The Secret Syllabus is a production of The Female Quotient and iHeartRadio and co-produced by The Female Quotient and Wonder Media Network.
See you after class.
Bye, guys.